Hello, everybody. This is Bill Knauer, and you're listening to Author, where we talk about writing and life, because what it takes to write the book you most want to write is also what it takes to lead the life you most want to lead. Author to Author is brought to you by Author Magazine, the premier free writing magazine on the internet, featuring articles on writing and the writing life, as well as video and audio interviews with best-selling and award-winning authors across the genres. And we got a new issue just up. This just came up Monday, just went live Monday. We've got interviews with Sarah L. Blum, who's written about abuse in the military. A charming woman, her first book. Corbin Addison, a suspense writer, lawyer and suspense writer, and romance writer Jerry Russell. Three great interviews. They're all live now. You can find them at authormagazine.org. And we are funded by the Pacific Northwest Writers Association, supporting writers from pen to publication since 1955. It's our 59th anniversary this year. And our conference, it's coming right up. It's going to be end of July, middle of July, down at the SeaTac Hilton. Still space available. You can go to pnwa.org and sign up. And speaking of conferences, next week I'll be up at the Chuckanut Writers Conference. Chuckanut, excuse me, I think. Nuck, nut, I don't actually know. Chuckanut Writers Conference, we'll say that. Up in Bellingham, Washington. And don't know how to say it, but it's a great conference. And I'll be there, and I think they still have room. So Bellingham, only about an hour outside of Seattle if you're in the Northwest, check it out. I'll be there talking and teaching and just generally having fun. So, you know, I don't know, maybe you're not like this. I am. There are certain words that I hear often enough. I encounter certain words often enough, read them, hear them in conversation, but I never actually look them up. And I start hearing them often enough, I start feeling like I do know what they mean, even when I don't. Like lugubrious. It's an odd word. I kept seeing it, reading it, hearing it, but I never bothered to look it up. But I saw it so often, I thought I knew what it meant, even if I didn't. Well, today's guest is like that for me. Kit Bakke. Kit, it seems like she's a fixture of the Seattle writing scene. And I started hearing her name almost as soon as I came out of my little cave and started getting involved with the local writing community, which is quite large. Almost as soon as I started meeting local writers, I started hearing her name, perhaps because she was one of the founding members of the Seattle Seven Writers, most of whom I've interviewed on this show or on Author, writers like Garth Stein, Erica Bauermeister, Jenny Shortridge, Deb Colletti, Kevin O'Brien, Jim Lynch. But also just because she's been around and she's public. I don't know why, but to the point where when I friended her on Facebook, I thought, I've already met her. I'm just sure of it. And she thought maybe she had met me, but we haven't. Well, we're going to remedy that today. Today I'm going to have her on a show. Now, Kit, just for the record, in addition to being mysteriously known to me, even though I don't know her, is also the author of two books, Miss Alcott's Email, published in 2006, and just recently, Dancing on the Edge from Book Trope, her second book. She is also the author of a play, which we're going to talk about, and another upcoming book about the Seattle 7 anti-war movement and the anti-war movement in Seattle in general. But we can talk to her about that. I don't need to fill you in. Let's get her on the show. Kit, welcome to the show.
Yes. Hi, Bill. Thanks very much.
My pleasure, Kit. And you know, I look forward to talking to you for a lot of reasons, but one of which, I always love to talk to writers who came to it a little later in life, who weren't, you know, hot on the MFA path right from the get-go. You came to writing sort of in the middle of your life, didn't you?
Absolutely, yes. I always have to say that I am not one of those people who thought they wanted to be a writer their whole lives and were always writing things and stashing them in drawers and sending them places, et cetera. So, no, I actually had to earn a living for a long time.
Sorry.
And right. Not that that's so different from other people, but I was a nurse for many years, specializing in pediatric oncology at Children's right here in Seattle.
Oh yeah, yeah. Sure.
And
is oncology the ears and
no,
the,
it's the cancer.
Oh, okay. Well, totally wrong. Okay, so you were there.
Yeah.
All right, so you were there. Wow, okay, so children with cancer. Very good.
Yep. Kids with cancer for many years, like about 13 years.
Okay.
And then I did a couple other things in healthcare. Ended up getting a couple of master's degrees, one in public health and one in community health nursing. I was interested in primary care after my children's experience, which, of course, is all tertiary care.
Yeah.
So I went to work at Group Health for 8 or 9 years, working primarily in their information technology business. This was a while ago when hospitals were just beginning to get electronic medical records and all that kind of stuff, and I was interested in the technology aspect of things. So I did that for a long time, and then I decided that I wanted to try something else and went into decided I would try to be a consultant. I figured at Group Health I had actually hired a number of consultants, and I thought, well, I could probably be a consultant. And so I tried that and worked for, and in fact still do some part-time work for, a local consulting company called Point B, which is a lovely, wonderful place in many ways, and did a lot of work in their healthcare practice.
Right.
Again, mostly with electronic medical records and all that kind of stuff. And then I just started writing, and I was, you know, in my middle 50s or early 50s at that point.
Wow.
And it's a long story of how I got to the Miss Alcott topic, which I won't go into, but I explain it in the book. But whatever, it was really sort of an epiphany for me, and I realized that after a while, I realized, oh my gosh, this could be a real book if I just had some time to really spend on it. And I got very irritable at home and annoying.
The writer disease.
And my husband finally said to me, he said, why don't you just take a year off and write this damn book and shut up about it? And so I did.
Great. That's awesome. You know, it's funny. I was listening to your little compressed biography there, and I know what you left out, of course, is that before you started working as a nurse in healthcare, you did a lot of activism in your youth.
Yes.
And you were sort of like a poster child for the baby boom in a certain way, and the baby boom generation. And so what I was thinking as I was listening to that is I was picturing that early part of your life, which included going to prison in Chicago and being a part of the Weather Underground, and then you move into nursing. But it was always like wanting to help, because people don't think of activism that way sometimes, but in fact that's always the motivation behind it, I think, which is wanting to help, wanting to change. Does that make sense?
Yes, thank you. You're absolutely correct. And I have to say that all the people I know from those days, all the weather people and everybody, all of us who are still alive and not in jail, everybody I know is involved in some, you know, social service, community service work. We're teachers and social workers. And so you're exactly right.
That's how it struck me. And the people I know who are very much involved in that don't always stay in the activism, but they take that energy elsewhere. And so what I'm wondering is, as you went into writing, that desire to help and connect in that way, I don't think that ever goes away if that's sort of how you're wired. So how did that go into writing? How did that find its place within your creative work?
Well, Louisa May Alcott, you really don't want to get me started on her because I am like her biggest fan. She was a woman of great principle. She lived a very principled life. She didn't just live her life, she constructed it. She made it.
She was deliberate.
She was deliberate, and she had a strong sense of duty. A lot of things that I think are important to bring into the 21st century. So a lot of the book is not preachy, but I did want that approach to life to come to life for readers today, and not, I mean, Little Women was really a very small part of what she did in her life. And yet most people only know the Little Women part. So that was what that's about. And the new book Dancing on the Edge is really about how it's about how to overcome terrible problems, how a 12-year-old girl overcomes terrible problems.
Yeah.
And again, how to help. It is. You're right. That's exactly right.
It's about how to. Well, you know, I was so interested to hear you talk about Louisa May Alcott in those terms, because right at the beginning of my little every show, I say the same thing. What it takes to write the book you want to write is what it takes to lead the life you want to lead. And by that, I mean this. And this is my exact language I use when I teach it. To write, you have to you come face to face with the fact that you need to create deliberately. Do you want to create your life accidentally or habitually, or do you want to create it on purpose? And as a writer, you have no choice. The page is blank. You've got to make choices. You've got to create
right.
on purpose. And your life, I think sometimes it's easy for us to believe that life can't be led in the same way, but I think that it can be if you just have to be a little more conscious about it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. And when I heard you say that in the beginning at the introduction, I thought, yeah, that's exactly right. There's an integrity about matching, about choosing your life and choosing what you write. That goes together, and it shows in your writing. You know, it will show in your writing.
I in fact would suggest that part of the terror people face when they first start to write, if they don't come to it as children, when we have no fear about these things usually, but as we get older, we start criticizing ourselves. Is the very fact that suddenly you realize it's all up to you. Nothing's going to write that for you. No one's going to tell you. You can read all the books you want and take all the classes, but in the end, every choice is up to you.
Yeah.
And I really think that our lives are that way, too. And isn't activism that – I mean, I admit, I haven't lived an activist life, but the people I know who do, it's about saying – it's all about being conscious. It's about asking other people to be conscious about the choices they're making and conscious about what's happening around them. Would you say that's fair?
Yes. To have the guts to question—I mean, that old, you know, bumper sticker,
question authority.
Yeah, I mean, you need to trust your own intelligence and think about things, and not just consume whatever is coming at you.
Yes, and to question authority—that always resonated with me. Even though I tended to get along okay with authority, but as a writer, you have to have the voice. You have to be my voice equal to anyone's.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't you have to have the courage to say my voice matters as much as anybody's voice, Shakespeare's voice? I don't care.
You do, and that's hard because first of all, you're not usually even conscious of what your voice is.
That's correct.
And then to know that's worth pursuing and putting down on paper, and also then to realize that, well, I think I know what my voice is, but I think I need to do another 12 drafts in order to get it the way I want it.
That's right. That's right. Well, now you've had the experience, I assume, having gotten your voice, begun to get your voice out in public, of hearing back from those strangers who your stories have reached. Have you got to experience that yet?
Oh, that's the best ever. That's the
Isn't
whole,
it?
That's to me, the whole point about writing is, to me, writing is a two-way communication. You know, it isn't about me spilling my guts on a piece of paper that may or may not ever see the light of day. To me, it's all about communicating with a reader, and I really believe that readers are as important as writers, not just because they will read my stuff, but because they're the ones who can take the ideas and the thoughts and the descriptions and make them their own and change them and in their own minds. It's just, it truly is a communication process, reading and writing.
Yeah. I always say that the reader finishes your story.
Yeah.
You start
it.
They have to, in a way. It really belongs
to
them.
Yeah, it totally belongs to the reader. It completely does. That's exactly right. Yeah.
And then you hear from them. I think it's fantastic. Every time I hear from one of my readers and they say if I've written something that has helped them or moved them or encouraged them or supported them.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I've never met them. I couldn't, you know, I didn't.
Right.
It's one thing to have a friend and say, help you, you poor person. This is a total stranger. You know, I do that too, and that's wonderful if I get the opportunity. But there's something just still kind of magical about it that it reaches them.
It is. Yeah, it's so rewarding. The Miss Alcott book, I did a lot of book club discussions, you know, appearances at local book clubs and stuff. And to be able to listen to women, and they were mostly women, responses to Louisa's life and my life. The book actually contains a lot of my life. It's basically it's me and Louisa talking to each other basically over time. And it triggered memories in readers' minds and like how women make choices in their lives. And they would remember back to when they were 16 years old and they made choice A or choice B. So it helped them understand their own lives. It's a privilege. It's a total privilege.
And now, speaking of audience, you, as I mentioned in my intro, you co-wrote, is that right? Co-wrote a play, a stage play.
Yes.
And with whom did you co-write it?
Elizabeth Heffron, H-E-F-F-R-O-N. Elizabeth Heffron is a playwright, a real playwright. I don't consider myself a real playwright at all.
But she's local. Isn't she local?
She is local. She teaches at Cornish, and she had a play premiered at the Rep this past season, Bonita, which maybe some of you
One woman play.
Really, really, really wonderful. She is terrific. Elizabeth is she's just been a joy to work with and has a wonderful sense of what a play needs to be and do, which is very different from a book. Very different.
Yeah.
So I learned a lot, and we're not done. Plays have a long trajectory of, you know, getting people get interested, and then nothing happens. You know how when you try to get a book published, it's the same. It's the same thing, but different. The details are different, but the generally long and depressing arc is the same.
Well,
our play is about the weathermen. It's about how does a nice white middle class white middle class college kids get like that? You know, how did you get to the point where you thought you had to go to war against your own government and you actually thought that was a reasonable strategy? And then what did it feel like to be in the middle of that frenzy? And then what happened? How did you get out of it, or how did you not get out of it? So it's that arc, if you will, in a pretty dramatic play.
How was it for you? I did do theater. I wrote and did some theater early in my life, and I really liked it. And one of the most magical experiences for me that I never predicted, although it's pretty obvious now in retrospect, was I would write the thing, and being a bit of an actor myself, I would hear all the dialogue in my head. But then other human beings would take over, and they would read it, and it would change in their when it passed through them. And that was very exciting to see it change as it passed through the creative filter. People, did you go through that at all when they did the stage reading?
Yes. Did you like that? Did you enjoy that process?
Oh, I loved it. I loved it.
Yeah.
It was so exciting.
It was wonderful. We, as I say, we had a chance to workshop it at the Seattle Rep about a year ago. And so we had our five actors and a director. We did four performances, and so we had 2 or 3 weeks of rehearsal time, which was really wonderful. And yeah, I was astounded at what a valuable collaborative process it is. I hadn't realized what a director brings to the production and what the actors do. It was really a wonderful experience.
It's significant. When I interviewed Nora Ephron while she was still alive, she talked about that. She said, you know, you can write something funny. She said, I wrote funny stuff. She said, but then Billy Crystal would get a hold of it and he would bring things to it that I just couldn't have, you know, I couldn't have thought
imagined,
to do. Just,
thought of,
right.
Yeah.
And so that's so collaborative. So it looks like we've got someone who wants to ask you a question, Kit. Let's see what he has to say.
Okay.
Jeff, is this you?
It is me, Bill. How are you?
I'm fabulous, Jeff. Thanks for calling in.
You're welcome. Well, another outstanding and fascinating interview, as always. Keep nailing those landings, my friend.
Thank you.
And hi, Kit. I love how you said that books and readers are two-way communication. I'm going to remember that. That's a wonderful way to phrase it. My question is, as Bill said earlier, you came to full-time writing in your late 40s. Do you feel coming to writing books later in life has unique differences and perhaps advantages over someone starting out writing at a much younger age?
Oh, that's a good question.
I
have no idea, really. I have to say I read a lot of books by people that are way younger than me, and but I admire people who can do that. I mean, I'm stunned at excellent writing at a young age. But, you know, I don't regret anything I did before I got to writing, so I guess writing is just one of the things that I do.
Yeah. Were you an avid reader? I bet you were.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Always a big reader. And, you know, I mean, I was editor of the college newspaper. And, I mean, I did do that sort of thing. But I never imagined doing it in any sort of a full-time basis.
But were you – did you write in a journal? Were you a journaler?
Oh, a little, but not much.
A little. Not really.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I did kind of come to it later. But, you know, and I admire that. You can get, I'm 49 now, and I know you look up and think, well, I've done what there is to. I can't teach this old dog new tricks and blah, 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 and think writing is such a, you know, it's like I'm not going to pick up a violin and get it into Carnegie Hall, but... But you didn't tell yourself that story, apparently, because here we are talking to each other.
I didn't, and I'm one of the reasons I really wanted to spend some time writing at that later stage in my life is because I was, as I say, I was doing consulting at the time, and I don't know if you know the consulting world, but you end up never writing a complete sentence. Everything you do is in PowerPoint. Everything you do is bullets in PowerPoint. And so I thought, oh my God, if I keep doing this, I'm going to forget how to write an English sentence. So I was trying to rescue myself.
That was your motivation?
That was part of it.
We're escaping PowerPoints. Well, you know what? Everybody has to find their own way there. But what a pleasure. Did you get the most surprising pleasure of it once you let yourself dig in?
That I could do it.
Ah, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah,
who knew,
that I could do it. And I found I loved writing dialogue. I could just like zip, 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 one person, another person, another person. I could like go back and forth and be two people at once. That was really fun.
And did you have the experience of just sort of listening to them as if they're talking to you?
You know, I don't. Yes and no. I know people, writers, talk about that the characters just took over and wrote the story, I can't say that with quite that degree of firmness. But Louisa, I was pretty much into Louisa May Alcott, and yes, in some ways she talked to me, but not the way I hear other writers talking about that.
Yeah, and I think that when course, when writers say that, they don't often mean as if they hear someone standing on their shoulder saying, yeah. I think there's a feeling of like you're following something, that you're not so much you're receiving something as opposed to building. Does that resonate at all?
Yeah, and that's what I got to say. I don't really feel like that. To me, it was always hacking away. Nobody was helping.
Nobody was clearing
the path, you know.
Right. you were
kind of like you were saying, you know, you've got a blank page. You got to make it up.
Yeah, you do. You have to ask yourself what you care about. That's a great opportunity about the blank page. Just what do you want? I mean, in fact, you know, it was interesting. The first time I did theater, Kit, well, my it's a long story, but I was going to put on a show. Somebody said, yes, you can put a show on. And so I had to ask myself this question. What could I do on a stage for an hour and a half that other people would find amusing? What would I like to put up there with my own blank page? Yeah, like what would be cool? And I started answering that question. And that's what the blank page. What do you think could be? Because anything you could write, romance, you can write mysteries, you can write histories, anything. Mm-hmm. What do you give a damn about? What is interesting to you? It's such a meaningful question. What does Kit give a damn about? You know.
And if you don't really have an answer to that, if your answer is really, well, I just want to, you know, see my name on a book cover and go to. You know, stuff like that, and you don't really have a connection to a topic, then you're going to just churn out pulp, I guess. And you could get rich doing that, but I don't think of it.
I don't think even that. I've talked to so many writers, Kit, and from whether they're written suspense or literature or poetry or screenplays, the unifying theme is they liked the thing. It was interesting to them. They were excited by it, turned on by it. They thought it was funny. They liked it. It meant something to them. And I think that's the key ingredient.
I agree, actually, because if you don't like it, you won't have the persistence to finish it. And I got to say, persistence is absolutely key. I mean, I think there are so many brilliant plot ideas out there that never get written because the person has the brilliant plot idea but just doesn't have the oomph to sit down day after day after day and write the darn thing. And then to draft it. I know for a fact that there are much better books than mine that are sitting in people's drawers already written somewhere, but they just don't have the oomph to go through the horrible process of finding a publisher.
Yeah. Persistence to finish it, persistence to allow somebody not to accept it because it's not the right book for them, and then try and find the right person. Yeah.
Yep.
Has writing, have you learned, do you feel like you've learned persistence on another level since you started writing?
I don't know. I think I've always been pretty dogged about everything.
Well, it helps.
Yeah.
Well,
I think so. Plus, you sort of have to have a thick skin, you know, to handle all that rejection.
Persistence. Well, what an excellent note to end on. Kit, that was quick, but we finally got to talk. Isn't that fantastic?
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. And so it's Dancing on the Edge is most recent, and that's probably best place to buy that is Amazon or Barnes & Noble.
Or IndieBound. I always like to encourage IndieBound.
Oh, good. Yes, of course.
Independent books. Yep, there it is.
All right. Well, listen, Kit, thank you so much. It's been great chatting.
Thanks, Bill. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Persistence. It's easy to be persistent. As you know, I end the show by telling you to do what you love, write what you love, and so on. But it's really true. If you write something you love, it's much easier to be persistent. It's easier to leave your attention on something long enough to finish it and then send it out and find a publisher for it if you love that thing, as opposed to you just want to finish it and get paid for it. Love is the organizing principle of the universe. All right, well, listen, thank you all for joining me. I'll be here next week. I'll be talking to Tess Thompson, another fabulous writer. And until then, as always, I want you to write what you love, do what you love, love who you love, You can't go wrong.